Welcome, and thank you for joining us on our February podcast of This Week in State Tax, also known as TWIST. My name is Harley Duncan, and I'm with the state and local tax team in KPMG's Washington National Tax Office. We're using this monthly podcast series to augment our regular Monday morning TWIST publication. Our guest today is Dan DeYoung, Managing Director in our Washington National Tax SALT practice. Dan focuses on complex multi-state income and franchise taxes and serves as the KPMG State Tax Resource Network income tax specialist for the state of Michigan. He has about 20 years experience in state and local tax, including 6 years with the Tax Executive Institute in the District of Columbia. Today, we're going to discuss the recent Arkansas State Supreme Court case in which the court ruled that interest expenses incurred by Murphy USA in a spinoff transaction could be allocated entirely to Arkansas as an expense rather than being apportioned among the states in which Murphy USA did business. The case came to some interesting conclusions that may be applicable to other sorts of transactions and in other states, but as we've talked about, it also seems like there's some caution flags for taxpayers to consider as they address similar situations. So Dan's going to help elucidate on that. Dan, welcome to the podcast. It seems like there's a lot to level set here. So how about you start with giving us a rundown of facts and key holdings in the case of Murphy USA in Arkansas?
Thanks, Harley. Thanks for having me on the podcast. Great to be here. You're right. This is a really interesting case. I'd say practitioners in state and local tax, even those of us with a long tenure in the practice like you and me, Harley, we're familiar with things like business and non-business income, but not necessarily with non-business expenses on their own. That was the issue there in the Murphy Oil USA decision from the Arkansas Supreme Court. And so let's get into the facts of the Murphy Oil USA case. The taxpayer in that case was Murphy Oil USA. It sells gas and other convenience store related items at convenience store and gas stations that it has across the country, and headquartered in El Dorado, Arkansas, the southern part of Arkansas. And in 2013, Murphy Oil USA was spun off from its then parent corporation. And in getting ready for this transaction, the parent corporation first formed a new holding company and then contributed all the stock of Murphy Oil USA to that new holding company. And then to fund the spinoff transaction, Murphy Oil USA at the entity level took out a $650 million loan and distributed that cash to that newly formed holding company, which then further distributed the cash to the old parent corporation. And the old parent corporation used that cash to pay down some third-party debt. Then the parent corporation spun out the stock of the new holding company so that now, after the transaction, the old parent company continued to hold its operations that it held historically, except for the Murphy Oil USA business, which was held separately by the shareholders of the old parent corporation. After the spinoff, Murphy Oil USA continued to pay interest on that debt that it had taken out, that $650 million debt that was used to fund the spinoff transaction, even though it didn't hold on to any of that cash anymore. Because remember, it was distributed to the old parent corporation prior to the spinoff. On its original state tax returns for the next couple of years, 2014 and 2015, Murphy Oil USA treated those interest expenses as deductible expenses that it apportioned with its other apportionable income. Later on, though, it decided to file an amended return in Arkansas for both 2014 and 2015, where it treated the interest deductions related to that spinoff debt, that $650 million debt, that interest was treated as allocable entirely to Arkansas under the theory that it was a non-business interest expense allocable entirely to Arkansas. So a much bigger deduction on the Arkansas return than it had in the past, where it apportioned that interest deduction. The Arkansas Department of Finance Administration denied the company's request for a refund, and the case eventually made it all the way to the Supreme Court. There were three main arguments the court addressed in the case, but we're only going to focus on one of those today related to the application of the state's statutory definitions of business and non-business income for determining whether the interest expense related to the spinoff debt was business or non-business income, and where the Arkansas Supreme Court concluded it was non-business, meaning allocable entirely to Arkansas. And just so folks are aware, the definitions that Arkansas uses in its statutes for business and non-business income are those that are used in UDIPA, a model statute that roughly half of the states have used to model their definitions of non-business and business income on. And applying those definitions, the court found the spinoff transaction was, and I'm quoting here, was an extraordinary and non-recurring event that did not relate to the acquisition, management, and disposition of property that constitute integral parts of the taxpayer's regular business. And those are the hallmarks of the statutory definition of business income. And because the court characterized this as not meeting those tests from the statutory definition of business income, it treated this expense as a non-business expense, totally allocable to the taxpayer's state of commercial domicile, which was Arkansas.
So we had to have a couple of different things, extraordinary and non-recurring, and then not related to acquisition, management, distribution, that's part of the regular course of business. As with you, I frankly have heard bordering on ad nauseum about non-business income, but not the expense side of it. And it seems, you know, if you're looking at UDIPA, there'd be a certain symmetry there, right? You're going to have extraordinary and non-recurring business income, but there's likely to also be instances of the non-business expense. So given that it comes out of UDIPA, and it's not a unicorn, this occurs, it seems like there'd be other areas, transactions, where we could end up with these extraordinary and non-recurring expenses, where you might be able to consider applying this same concept and treatment to. Is that fair?
Yeah, Harley, I think you're right. You don't see this issue as much. Most of the time when you see expenses that are related to non-business income, you're seeing situations where it's the traditional, I have non-business income, whether it's the sale of stock in a subsidiary that I only own a small amount of, or some other transaction that relates to an asset that really wasn't ever used in a taxpayer's trade or business. And there may be expenses related to the sale of that asset, for example, that you would then offset against that business income. And we see that pretty often, but less common are situations like this where there's no income side to this. There's only an expense. So in our case for Murphy Oil USA, it was the interest expense related to the funds used for the spinoff, just an expense. And it's not that common, but it does come up now and then. So some examples of where you see this happening are leveraged spinoffs, like the Murphy Oil USA case. That's kind of the technical term people use for that. Also, you might have interest on debt when a company takes out new debt just to fund maybe a leveraged buyout by management that's funded through new debt taken on by the company. There's just an expense related to that new debt, the interest associated with it, without an income side to it. So often these situations can arise where there's a change in maybe the capital structure of the business and you just have this expense side to it without the income side to it.
That's very helpful. Where you're likely to see this arise is where you've got the large non-business expense that's not related to non-business income. That's helpful where it's not going to be normally used as an offset. And that's helpful to me, at least, in understanding what sorts of instances this would apply. You mentioned that the Arkansas case relied pretty heavily on a close examination of UDIPA and its principles and how they were enacted into Arkansas law. I know over time been considerable discussion and change in the concept of non-business as it relates to UDIPA. The question would be, Based on your experience, do you think all or most states would see a similar situation in the same manner that the Arkansas court did? And would they recognize the concept of non-business expense? Or would they be more likely to paraphrase Alfonso Bedoya in the Treasurer of the Sierra Madre with something like, non-business expense, we don't have to show you any stinking non-business expense?
Wow, that's an impressive film reference there. I had to Google that one. But what I learned was that it's arguably one of the best films of the 20th century. So I'm learning stuff, like hopefully our listeners are learning here as well. And maybe like that movie was to me, this non-business income expense concept is to others. It just floats under the radar till it's right there and presented to you. Getting back to your question, is the concept of non-business income something that we'd expect to see uniformly applied among the states around the country? I think like most state tax concepts, the answer is no there. I mean, the roots of this concept go back to constitutional limitations, which are a federal level limitation on state taxes. But when you get to the implementation of that in the states, I think you see a real lack of conformity across states, even in the many states that conform to UDITPA for providing the definitions to their business and non-business income terms used in their state statutes. I do want to point out one state, though, that has come to my attention recently. Like you mentioned, I do a fair amount of work in Michigan. And there, the State Department of Treasury recently put out a ruling or a bulletin related to apportionment and requesting alternative apportionment, but it went farther than that. It also included non-business income, which I think would also include the concept of a non-business expense. And in Michigan, under this new bulletin, taxpayers that want to report an item as non-business income on a tax return, and I think including a non-business expense, are required by this new bulletin to request approval from the department to use what they call alternative apportionment, but what we would commonly call just reporting non-business income or non-business expense. You have to ask for permission from the Michigan Department of Treasury and obtain that permission before you can take that on a return. And I just think that this shows the potential difference that states can have in their treatment about non-business income or non-business expense. And it also highlights the need for taxpayers, I think, to be thinking about these issues way before they need to make decisions about how to report them on a return. Be proactive with that is my advice.
Yeah, so identify the possibility, then careful statutory analysis, a careful analysis of what any guidance, precedent, and the like in the state may show you, and then make sure of the process, the procedure for going about doing that. So it's not something that's going to just say, oh, yes, we're finishing our return, we might be able to pull this off. Needs to be really thought through. I guess that leads to an additional question, which is taxpayer Murphy certainly got a good result in Arkansas. But as I've heard people discuss this and read a couple things, it's not always clear, it seems to me, that it's going to work out as well as it did in Arkansas. Nor that is it necessarily a complete 100% gain, right? There's some risks and thought that need to be given to it. Are there some cautionary considerations that you think taxpayers should take into account when they confront a similar situation to this?
Yes, definitely. The taxpayer in the Murphy Oil case in Arkansas was factually well suited to take this from a tax benefit perspective. They were headquartered in Arkansas so that when they had a non-business expense like this that's allocable to their state of commercial domicile, that's a real benefit to them. But that's not always the case. And so taxpayers should be cautious when they're looking at situations like this and whether they have an argument for or whether they should report an expense as a non-business expense. The example I think is best, it's now getting to be an older case out of Kansas from around 2000, where the Supreme Court of Kansas dealt with a situation where the taxpayer was Kroger, the supermarket store, and the taxpayer had taken on debt to fund distributions to its shareholders to defend a hostile takeover bid. and a bunch of debt taken on. So after they had taken on that debt and issued the proceeds to the shareholders to defend against this takeover bid, now they had a large debt on their books that they had to pay interest on. And the department in Kansas at the time argued, well, because Kroger is not commercially domiciled in Kansas, and because the interest deducted related to this debt taken on to defend the hostile takeover bid was a non-business expense, that the taxpayer didn't get to deduct any of that expense on its Kansas return. This is kind of the flip of the Murphy Oil USA case in Arkansas, because in the Kroger case in Kansas, the taxpayer was allowed to take no deduction. It wasn't an apportionable deduction. It was an allocable deduction, non-business, but allocable to the state of Kroger's commercial domicile, which wasn't Kansas. And so that just shows you how this can create a situation where instead of becoming an advantage for a taxpayer, it can become a disadvantage. And again, as you mentioned before, Harley, with the states taking sometimes different positions on what qualifies as a non-business expense, you could see the environment is there for situations where taxpayers could get big benefits from this, like Murphy Oil did, or big detriments, maybe more like Kroger did. So something to be really careful about.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Dan. So anything else in this area you think we should be aware of? This has really been very helpful.
Not a whole lot to advise people on, just more be aware. And once you think you have identified a situation where non-business expenses could have arisen, or really non-business income for that matter, just plan for it. Look at the states you're filing in, the big states that are important for you, understand some of the procedural issues you would need to go through to claim that approach on a return. That's my example of Michigan, where advance permission is required to take some of these positions. Other states allow you to treat all income as a portionable business income, regardless of if it might be a non-business expense or non-business income. Colorado and Illinois allow you to check the box on the return, take that position. So these are just examples, I think, of ways that taxpayers can plan and be ready for the way that ultimately, like we talked about, when you report these items on the return, they're consistent with what you want to do, what you have to do, and you're making the best decisions for your company in what you choose to do. So there's lots to talk about. We could talk more, but I think it's just fun stuff for us state and local folks.
All right. There are many people probably wouldn't get as excited as you, Dan, but we really appreciate it. It's been very, very helpful in understanding this and some of the thinking that needs to go around if you do confront a situation like this in your own experience. I hope we'll be able to have you back talking about some other topic another day, Dan. But as we close, I just wanted to give our listeners a couple of fun Arkansas facts. Arkansas is officially designated as the natural state for many areas of natural beauty. At various points in time, though, it's been called the bear state because of the bear population, the land of opportunity, Rackensack, and my favorite, the toothpick state. If those last two don't mean a lot to you, Rackensack is a term for early folk hill music, 18th, 19th century, with lots of banjos, fiddles, guitars, dobros, and the like. And toothpick comes from the double-edged knives that frontiersmen and others often wore in a holster-like arrangement on their side. Those double-edged knives were called toothpicks and apparently were quite prevalent throughout Arkansas at the time. So there you go. Again, thanks, Dan. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast, and we will see you again. Thank you.